Hi everybody, my name is Bill. I'm an alcoholic. Welcome back for those of you that have been coming all workshop. This is our second to last session together. Next week I'm going to do a meditation workshop. So I guess I'd like to ask the group not to make coffee next week. Because for those of you that don't know, coffee and nicotine tends to stir up the system and meditation tends to calm down the system. So if that's news to any of you, then that means you probably hate meditation because you probably weren't able to do it very well. But next week we'll have a meditation workshop and then I'm finished with the workshop. Tonight I'm going to talk about step 12. And usually when I talk about step 12, I talk about working with others. But if you look at the window shade version of the steps, the 12th step kind of talks about three different things. It talks about having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. It talks about carrying the message to alcoholics, and it talks about practicing these principles in all our affairs. And tonight I'd like to do something that I don't get to do that often and that I really love doing, and that is tonight I'm going to talk exclusively about spirituality and the spiritual awakening, and especially where it talks about the spiritual awakening in our AA literature. So the first thing I want to mention about spirituality is it's sort of something for you guys to work with during the meeting, and maybe you can start working with it at all future meetings, and that is that there's this little-known spiritual practice that we have an opportunity to work with in the fellowship of AA, and that spiritual practice is, during the meeting, putting your complete attention on and listening to the person who's speaking. Now, I don't know about you, but this is an advanced spiritual practice, because usually we're sitting here and we're thinking about dinner and we're thinking about something that happened at work and we're thinking about something that was said to our child and we're thinking about the bills that need to be paid and we're sitting at a meeting and all of a sudden an hour goes by and we're just like, oh man, I totally missed that meeting. Because you did. You were in your head and you were just taken out of a meeting. You were just distracted out of a meeting by your mind. And I remember when I went to rehab for the last time, because I've gone to more than one, and one of the things that they said to me was to pay attention when you're at a meeting and focus exclusively on whoever is talking, and that you never know. This is what they said, and I remember it as if it was yesterday. They said, you never know when you might hear something that's going to save your life someday. Mm-hmm. And they didn't say this, but the only thing I add to that today is that you might hear something that's going to save your life someday, and it doesn't need to mean it's going to save your life today. If I'm able to take in what's being said at meetings, a year from now I might realize something that was said that will be very helpful to me. So this is the exercise I'd like you to work with during the rest of this meeting, and that is, and I'm not just saying this because I'm speaking, I'm saying this at all meetings, that if you can be at a meeting for an hour and focus exclusively and paying full attention to whoever is talking, after that meeting is over, you will have been out of your head for an hour, and oh, what a relief it is. So I want to start with that, because that's sort of what I would refer to as a little-known spiritual practice in AA. I mean, when was the last time that was a topic at a meeting? Never. Tonight I'm speaking, so, you know, I'm not saying this for me, I'm saying this for you. Just, when you're at a meeting, focus entirely on whoever it is that's speaking, and try to do nothing else. It's a very practical spiritual practice. Now, there's something that I've been talking about for a few years now, and it's what I refer to as the essence of recovery. It's an article I'm going to write sometime soon, and I'm going to submit it to the Area 44 newsletter, because they've been nice enough to include all my other articles, so why not give them another one to include? The essence of recovery. As far as I'm concerned, the essence of recovery So in other words, I'm boiling down all of recovery down to one thing. The essence of recovery is that we have to quit playing God. In other words, we have to surrender the illusion of control. Let me say that again. The essence of recovery is that we have to quit playing God. In other words, we have to surrender the illusion of control. Very, very important. Don't necessarily ask me to explain that. You have to just sort of discover it for yourself. All the areas of our life that are causing us misery is because we're playing God. And if you want to have any chance at recovery, and if you want to have any chance at peace of mind, we have to quit playing God. Now, this might be news to some of you, but you're actually not in control of your own life. So that's why we have to surrender the illusion of control. Life is in control of life. Think about the three biggest changes that ever happened to you in your life. I can almost guarantee you that you had nothing to do with bringing that about. All of a sudden, your job ended. All of a sudden, you got hit with a health situation. All of a sudden, and don't get me wrong, you know, there's ways that change happens that we do contribute to, you know, in relationship and stuff like that. But, you know, all of a sudden we get into an accident. You know what I mean? Like, we had no control over most of the major things that happened to our life. Now, I've shared this before, but life, don't be scared. Life knows what it's doing. Life knows what it's doing. And since I'm talking about spirituality tonight, I want to be talking about some stuff. I'm not asking you to agree with me. I'm just asking you to let it in. And life knows what it's doing. And the way that I describe it is that life always and only has your best interests in mind. So if you've ever gone through forced painful change, that's what I describe it, forced painful change, you know, change is not nice sometimes. As a matter of fact, I'll go so far as to say a change is almost never nice. But if we use it in a spiritual way, if we use it to grow spiritually, what I've discovered over and over and over again, to the point where now I can just predict when I'm going through forced painful change, I know that I'm going to come out the other end the better for having gone through it. As a matter of fact, that's one of the things that... as a matter of fact, the only time I've ever shared it publicly was the last time I was here. Last time I was here was like maybe 5 or 6 years ago. I did a workshop on Trust God, Clean House, and Help Others. And in the first session, for the first time ever, I threw out this spiritual question that I sometimes ask people that I work with. It's a two-part question. And the two-part spiritual question, which is incredibly profound and incredibly important that I would like you to consider, is one, do you believe that God still interacts with the world? Because you may not know this, but there's whole religions that believe that God cannot be directly experienced. So obviously AA does, because AA talks about conscious contact. It talks about improving conscious contact. So obviously AA believes that you can directly experience God. As a matter of fact, an agnostic is somebody that believes that God exists, but you can't directly experience it. So the first question is, do you believe that God still interacts with the world? AA obviously believes that. I don't think I've, of the people that I've asked, that the people that I've asked these two questions to, the first one, they always say yes. Yes, I believe that God is still here and that he's somewhat interactive or whatever you want to call it. And then I have to ask the second question, and they hate the second question, and I've gotten all kinds of answers to the second question. But the second question is much more important, and that is, you know, again, one, do you believe that God still interacts with the world? And two, a much more important question, do you believe that God always has your best interests in mind? Because if you believe that God doesn't know what he's doing or that he doesn't have your best interests in mind, you better get a new concept of a higher power, because you're basically screwed. Because here in AA, we're saying that there's a need for a higher power and a relationship with that higher power. And if you believe he doesn't have your best interest in mind, what good is that relationship? So we have to quit playing God. Has anybody here had any success at playing God? Raise your hand. Okay. I've had a 100% response rate to nobody ever raising their hand when I asked that question. And you know, I don't have to go into great deal of detail about what I'm talking about. You all know what I'm talking about. The ways you manipulate others, the ways that you argue with reality. That's how you're playing God. When we're manipulating others, it rarely goes very well. And when we're trying to control life. You know, it's interesting because what I've discovered is in working and reworking the steps, because I feel very strongly about reworking the steps, I no longer believe that going through the steps once is going to be enough for anyone for the rest of their life. Let me just throw that out there. And what the reworking of the steps turns into is that the first time I went through the steps, it was very much about powerlessness over alcohol, unmanageability related to alcohol. But in reworking the steps, what the steps have turned into for me, what the first step especially has turned into for me, is that I'm powerless over life. And when I try to control my life becomes unmanageable. And for me, that's what reworking the steps turns into. It's not about alcoholism anymore. I haven't drank in years. And then another thing that I like talking about in regard to the essence of recovery is that life, spirituality, recovery, etc., is about relationship. I'm really sorry if that's news to you. I remember one time being at a party. I was invited to a Christmas party, and you know, I'm sort of a unique kind of bird, and I'm not a really big fan of, how about those Giants? The weather was nice today, wasn't it? Like, I'm just not that kind of a conversationalist, all right? I like having real conversations with people. I travel all over the United States. I go to, I talk to thousands of people in recovery all year round. I really, really love it. And, I'll sit down for a meal with a bunch of people that I've never met before and say to people, do you meditate? And I won't even take a yes or no answer. I'll say, okay, well, yes, you meditate. Tell me exactly what you do. And have, like a real conversation. What kind of things do you still struggle with in your life? What kind of things are you still struggling with that you've been struggling with your whole life? Let's have that conversation. But this guy was walking around this Christmas party that day, and I kind of overheard him a couple times with a couple different people. He was relatively new, and he was going around telling people about how well he was doing spiritually. Now, I don't know about you, but I know enough about life that when somebody is going around bragging to people about how well they're doing spiritually, that usually means they're not. All right. So finally, he got to me at the party because he was just going around to different people, and he brings up that he's doing really well spiritually. And I knew he would because I heard him going around to everybody and talking about how well he was doing spiritually. So what I like doing with people like this, and what I especially like doing with new people, it's something that I get a real thrill out of, probably in a sick way, but I really do get a thrill out of it. And that is that I love getting newcomers to talk. And just keep asking them questions. Just get them talking. And then eventually they're going to say something that you can use against them. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that, sometimes it could be really eye-opening. You know what I mean? And so this guy had just said to me that he's doing really well spiritually. So then I said, well, talk to me about that. And I kind of got him talking about it. And then finally I dropped the bomb on him. And I said to him, how are your relationships with your family? Oh, I don't talk to them anymore. Screw them, And I said, how are your relationships at work? I don't talk to them. Screw them. And then I said, you just contradicted yourself. And he goes, what do you mean? And I said, when we're doing really well spiritually, that means we're doing really well in relationship. And needless to say, that conversation ended pretty quickly. And, he was back on to talking to other people to try to convince them that he was doing really well spiritually. And, you know, I can honestly say he wasn't interested in what I had to say, but if we're growing in recovery, if we're growing in spirituality, we're getting better in relationships. Now, there's three relationships. We're all in three relationships. We're in a relationship with ourselves, we're in a relationship with God, and we're in a relationship with others, which includes little pooches and the world around us. All right, so we're always and only in three different relationships. Now, again, don't ask me to explain this, but what I've discovered is that we have three relationships with ourselves, with God, and with others. And what I've discovered is that they're actually all the same relationship. And the way that I know that is because if I'm growing in my relationship with God, my relationship with myself and my relationship with others is growing also. And if I'm growing with my relationship with myself, my relationship with others and my relationship with God is growing also. So it's actually one relationship with sort of three aspects. So, you know, silently to yourself now or at some other point, how are you doing in relationship? Because I can guarantee you that that's going to be a barometer on how am I doing spiritually. Also, coincidentally, is that the first three steps get us headed in the right direction with our relationship with God. Steps 4 through 7 get headed in the right direction with our relationship with ourselves. Steps 8 and 9, we get headed in the right direction with our relationship with others. And then in step 10, we deepen and broaden our relationship with ourselves. In step 11, we deepen and broaden our relationship with God. And in step 12, we deepen and broaden our relationship with others. So literally, the steps are purely about relationship, the three relationships that I've mentioned. And then the last thing I like talking about in regard to the essence of recovery is for like 8 or 9 years, me and my sponsor at the time, the late, great Howard G., used to bring a meeting every Tuesday night to the VA hospital in Lyons. It was one of the most satisfying things I've ever done. We used to bring a meeting every week to the VA hospital in Lyons. It was just, man, it was just really, really awesome doing that. And at one of the meetings, it was about 2 minutes before the meeting was going to end, and this guy raised his hand, and I called on him, and he said, "Bill, what's the single most important thing about recovery? The one thing that's the most important thing about recovery." And I basically said to him, you know, listen, there's only 2 minutes left in the meeting, and I can't BS you for you know, I would have to BS an answer for more than 2 minutes. So, you know, the meeting's about to end, so why don't you let me think about it? And next week when we come back for the meeting, I'll share with you what I think. Because I could tell he was really, really serious about the question, and I wanted to give him a really, really serious answer. So, you know, we ended the meeting, and I went home, and for the next week, basically, I tried to sort of intellectualize an answer, and I came up with a few answers that I thought were pretty good, but when I would consider them, it just didn't seem like it was the answer. It didn't seem like it was the right answer. It didn't sit with me as, this is it, this is the answer. So the next week when we went back, we started the meeting, and I said, you know, I just want to let the gentleman know in the back that I am still taking his question seriously, but I don't have an answer yet. Give me another week, and I'll let you know what I find. So during the second week, I did something different than I did the first week. The first week, I tried to make it happen. I tried to figure it out sort of on my own. The second week, I did a infinite spiritual practice, and that is that I posed the question to the universe, and then I dropped off the answer and just waited for something to come. We've all experienced this as a spiritual practice. We've all experienced putting a problem out into the universe and getting a response back. And what I mean by that is, when was the last time you, like, lost your keys and you couldn't find your keys? And you looked everywhere and you couldn't find your keys. You called your friends, you called your wife, you called your husband, you called your kids. You couldn't find your keys. And one of those people that you talked to said, you know, listen, you're getting all riled up about it. You know, why don't you put your mind off of it for a few minutes? Why don't you do the dishes? Why don't you do something else and not, you know, not hammer yourself with where your keys are? And, you know, maybe something will come to you. You know what I mean? And then, you know, you sit down and you start doing the dishes. And, you know, 5 minutes later, all of a sudden, not from your mind, but into your mind, the answer comes. It's in your jacket. You go over to your jacket, there's your keys. You know what I mean? We've all experienced posing a question to the universe and getting an answer, and we don't notice that that's what's going on. We just got an answer from the universe. We did not figure this out on our own. The thought came into our head, not from our head. And during the next week, it took about 3 days, and all of a sudden an answer came to me, and I said, that's it. That's the answer. And that happened, you know, more than 15 years ago, and still to this day, this is the answer to the question. What is the single most important thing about recovery? I paused for dramatic effect. One time I did that and I just went on to something else. Everybody was like, wait, what are you talking about? What is it? It's really strange because still to this day, it gives me goosebumps, and still to this day, it's an absolutely perfect answer. So what is the single most important thing about recovery? And that is consistency. Because you see, you might have done like some step work 5 years ago, but if you're not still involved in those steps as a way of life, that work that you did is not being very helpful for you right now. You know, it's almost like, you know, the alcohol that I drank a week ago is not going to get me buzzed today. I need to be consistent with drinking it. So the single most important thing about recovery is consistency. And the interesting thing about that answer is that, you know what? If your sponsor sucks, and if the program you're working is really, really bad, if you're consistent with it, you're going to find out that it doesn't work, that it's not working. If you're consistent with doing the things that the book talks about in regard to, you know, being of service, expecting nothing in return, working and reworking the steps, attending AA meetings and talking to, you know, members of the 12-step fellowships, even outside of meetings. If you're involved in all three sides of the triangle, you know, trying to make integrity important, trying to make honesty important, trying to make love important, trying to make forgiveness important, trying to grow spiritually. If you're being consistent with this stuff, it's going to work today just as good as it's going to work 5 years from now. But consistency is almost the single most important thing for an alcoholic. So I know that what I'm saying is, wow, that's a lot to expect. But there it is. The single most important thing about recovery. Consistency. So those are the three things that I talk about in regard to the essence of recovery. Now, another thing I'd like to talk about that's a really, really, as far as I'm concerned, important thing about spirituality, let's call it. I've been saying every week during this workshop that God is always and already here. God is always and already here. Here is the only place that you can experience God. And it's interesting because, you know, I love that sentence in How It Works where it talks about there's one that has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. It's not saying a week from now. It's saying now. May you find him now, and now, and now, and now. Here and now is the only place you can experience God. And the only thing that can take you away from that experience is your mind. Because what your mind's interested in is the past, to argue with the past and to have resentments. And the mind's very much about being worried about the future. But it disregards almost entirely the present because the present isn't important. Because in the present, there's no problems. In the present, there's nothing much going on. Right now, you're just sitting at a meeting. That's it. You're not at home dealing with your bills. You're not at home dealing with your family. You're not at work dealing with whatever's going on there. You're just here, sitting here. But your mind wants to get involved and be pissed about what's happened and be worried about what hasn't happened yet. That's what the world of the mind has it's a three-trick pony. It's resentful about what's happened, it's worried about what's hasn't happened yet, and it's basically rejecting what's happening right now. And what's happening right now is the only reality there is. So if you're in your mind, you're not in reality at all. You're in the past and you're in the future. And you know, sometimes you hear people talk about that, you know, I feel like life's passing me by. Guess what? It is. Because you're in your head. People say, I have to go find myself. I have to go find myself. Like, where have you been? So God is always and already here. Now, another thing that's really important, and I find it interesting that every religion and every spiritual path includes this concept, every single one, without exception, and that is the concept of this too shall change. There's only one constant in life, ladies and gentlemen, and remember you heard it here first. There's only one constant in life, and that is change. Very bad news for the alcoholic. We don't like change at all. We don't like change unless we created the change. We have to find a way to be comfortable with change, because life is all about change. Another almost impossibility for an alcoholic. It's so important in our fellowship that we have a slogan with it, right? Now, another thing I want to talk about, it's one of my favorite bumper stickers of all time. And it sort of, I've already kind of talked about it, but let me just mention it in the way I'd like to mention it. And that is the famous bumper sticker that says, "Don't believe everything you think." Can you imagine what our political world would look like if they didn't believe everything they thought? Can you imagine what your life would look like if you didn't believe everything you thought? Spirituality is very much about beginning to have an absolutely new relationship with our thinking. Because you see, one of the biggest changes that happened for me in my life was when I started seeing that, man, my thinking has caused all the problems that I've ever had, without exception. So, what do you do about that? Because our mind is so cunning, baffling, and powerful that it has us convinced that our thinking is us. So one of the things that I do that's been really, really helpful is I don't refer to it as my thoughts. I refer to it as the thoughts. And what's interesting is that because, assuming that everybody here is an alcoholic, because we all have what could be called alcoholic software. It's interesting because we'll be sitting at a meeting and we'll be just fully identifying with something that somebody's talking about. Now, how did that thought get into their head? Because it's the same thought that's in my head. And the reason why we identify so strongly is because we have this thing that might be called alcoholic software. It's unique to alcoholics. We have a unique, selfish and self-centered way of looking at life. And that's an understatement, as far as I'm concerned. It's a major understatement. It's a whole lot worse than that. One of the best ways of describing the spiritual malady in the 12 and 12 talks about that, self-centered fear. Our problem is like self-centered fear. That's how the 12 and 12 describes sort of the spiritual malady and the essence of our problem. Self-centered fear. Fear created by self-centeredness. I go through life being pissed at you because you're not acting the way I want you to. I go through life being pissed at life because life isn't happening the way I want it to. I go in and out of relationships because I have to withhold love because you're not acting the way I want you to. If you have to act the way I want you to, that's not love. I remember having a conversation with my mom one time because my mom, she was a really wonderful lady. She was a very special lady. She had the same kind of mind that I did. She wasn't an alcoholic, but she had the same kind of mind that I did, which, when I came here, I'm sure nobody here can relate to this, but I was very judgmental. Nobody, you don't relate to that, right? And, just judgmental and critical, you know what I mean? Like, I knew what was best for you and everybody, you know what I mean? And, my mom, I had that piece. I never would suggest that I sort of got that from her, but I know that that was something that we sort of had in common. And, she would occasionally say certain things to me like, when are you going to grow up? Why don't you put shoes on? They call you Barefoot Bill because you never wear shoes. Why don't you put some shoes on? Why don't you wear a tie to work? What's with the tie-dye? And it's really interesting because, you know, I've become incredibly comfortable with myself. And one day, my mom was in the kitchen and she had just made some comment, sort of unknowingly, because, you know, our judgmentalism, you know, it just happens. We're not really paying attention that much, you know what I mean? This stuff just comes out, you know what I mean? We make comments, you know what I mean? It's just, you know, on some level, it's sort of a part of how we are, or whatever you want to call that. And my mom had made some, you know, comment about, you know, you came all the way to her house and you didn't even bring shoes with you. You know what I mean? Like, she was pissed because I not only was being barefoot, but I didn't even bring shoes with me. And it's like a whole nother level of being pissed about the barefoot thing, you know? And, you know, my family was sort of around, and my mom was by herself in the kitchen. And I walked into the kitchen and I said something to her, and I had never heard this before. I had never thought this before. I have no idea where it came from. But I walked into the kitchen and I said, "Mom, do you love me?" And she goes, "Yeah, I love you." And I said, "No, really, do you really, really love me?" Mm-hmm. She goes, "Yeah, of course I do. Why are you asking me that?" And I said, "Because why are you always trying to change me?" Mm-hmm. And my mom looked at me, and I looked at my mom, and she just got it. And she stopped being critical so much after that. Now, that's not how I handle things. If somebody had come to me and said, you know, it would have taken me, you know, many of those conversations to, like, kind of figure it out. My mom just got it. And she all of a sudden stopped being critical to everybody. It was like a miracle as far as I'm concerned. But there, you know, there it is. There it is. Love, when I love someone, that means as is. How many of us are like waiting for the other person to change? How many of us are trying to get the other person to change? How many of us, our project is to get them to change? How is that going in the relationship, right? How is that going, right? Love means as is. If it's not working for you, as is. If it's abusive or it's whatever, then maybe that's not the relationship for you. But trying to get them to change? I've never had success with that. And I can't tell you how annoying that is when somebody went on somebody's project. You know what I mean? I remember my first ex-wife used to do something that used to drive me nuts. She used to count my drinks. Because she wanted me to change. You know what I mean? One of the things that my teacher sometimes says is he'll go like this. He'll go, "Too much of this and not enough of this." Too much in audio land, too much of a closed fist, too much holding on, too much grasping, and not enough open hand. Let it go. There's a big difference between making it happen and letting it happen. You know what I mean? Like, making it happen, that's a lot of pressure on me. You know what I mean? Like, letting it happen, you know, you can feel the, you know, you can feel the tension go down. You know what I mean? Too much of this and not enough of this. Just let it go. That's a really great meditation, by the way. Meditate on letting go. Just let go. I mean, can you feel the ease with just the phrase "let it go"? Like, just let it go. There's that famous saying that goes, you know, "Do you want to be right or do you want to have peace?" Do you want to be right? And yeah, you know, maybe what they're doing isn't so good, but do I want to have peace? Then I'm not allowed to judge it either. Because as soon as I'm criticizing, I'm now judging. I need to go from, you know, the critic in my head. Like I said, we need to have a new relationship with our thoughts. Am I going to go with the critic, which is the devil on my shoulder? Or am I going to go with the inner guide, which is the angel on my shoulder? Am I going to go with being judgmental? Or am I going to go with love? Am I going to go with the critic, or am I going to go with the unsuspected inner resource? This is just some random stuff that I really love. This is a quote from A Course in Miracles. Listen to what it says. There's two quotes from A Course. It says, "If you knew who walks beside you at all times on this path that you have chosen, you could never experience fear or doubt again." If you knew who walks beside you at all times on this path that you chose, you could never experience fear or doubt again. And then the second quote. "What could you not accept if you but knew that everything that happens, all events, past, present, and to come, are gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good? What could you not accept if you but knew that everything that happens, all events, past, present, and to come, are gently planned by one whose only purpose is your good?" This is a quote by Hannah Whittle Smith. "Put together all the tenderest love you know. Put together all the tenderest love you know. The deepest you have ever felt, and the strongest that has ever been poured out upon you. And heap upon it all the love of all the loving human hearts in the world, and then multiply it by infinity. And you will begin, perhaps, to have some faint glimpse of the love that God has for you." In other words, everybody that's sitting here and everyone in the world, there's a picture of you on God's refrigerator. Because you're his favorite. Him, ridiculous pronoun. You understand what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure God doesn't have genitals. You know what I mean? Like, I always get a kick out of that whole thing. And then I also get a kick out of, like, you know, the athletes that are, like, pointing up. It's like, what, the cloud helped them? Like, what, God's, like, revolving the earth or something? Like, why is everybody always pointing up? Like, God isn't up there, over there, out there. God is always and already here. And, you know, I understand the whole thing. I'm just making fun of some silly thing. I've always waited for that day when the athlete says, "We lost the game because God screwed us." But that would be my happiest day, was if an athlete would be completely honest. Because, you know, they always say, you know, God, you know, we won because of God. You know what I mean? Well, it seems to me that there's two teams that play here. So if God helped them win, so that means God screwed you. So let's be honest about the whole thing. You know what I mean? There's this really beautiful line that I sometimes repeat, and that is that, you know how sometimes we, you know, pray to get the job, or we pray and ask God, my mom's in the hospital, you know, God, please heal her, or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, something that I've seen in my life, and something that I believe strongly about, is that God has never said no to one of my prayers. But what God has said to me is, yes, not yet. And then the third one is so much more profound. I have something better in mind for you. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't say no to me. He just realizes that, you know, perhaps I'm a child, and that what he has in mind for me is so much better than what I have in mind for me. You know, there's that famous quote that, you know, anything at all that God has in mind for me is better than anything at all that I will ever have in mind for me. This is a quote from Joyce Meyer, who is a Christian preacher. She said some important things in this paragraph. She said, "God is our joy, not the lack of problems. We need to learn to trust. God may not deliver us from what we want to be delivered from, because he may prefer to work something in us and is actually using the circumstance as a tool. We always want everything else to change. We want our circumstances to change, and we want all the people around us to change, but God wants the change. What God wants to change us. God is always working in our lives, but he may not be working in the area of our preference. If we trust him, then we believe that whatever he's doing is what's best. There's a workshop that I've always wanted to do, and this is the title of the workshop: Do You Need a Bigger God? I mean, look at your fears and worries. If there was a loving God in your life, would you have any of those concerns? If you believe that God always and already has your best interest in mind, would you ever worry about anything? Very often what we worry about and what we fear reveals to us what we think about God without us really even knowing it. There's a famous quote that I had found at one time, and they said that, and I love this. I mean, this is like so extreme, but you know, there's certain things and certain people that just like are able to just go right to the heart of the issue. And I don't know if this is one of them, but I really do love this quote. It goes like this: all fear is low-grade atheism. Oh, play with that one, huh? All fear is low-grade atheism. And then this one I really love. And you know, again, I know that this is over some people's heads. It doesn't matter to me. And it shouldn't matter to you. I know that, like for instance, I remember, you know, I read in the Big Book and I started believing that, you know, deep down within all of us is God. So, you know, God's within me, right? So that was one of the ways that I started working with God in the beginning. It wasn't necessarily news to me, but it was something that could really work for me, that God's within me. So if God's within me, then God is always and already here. So that's good, right? It's a good pointer as far as I'm concerned. And then I was at this, it was like a Unitarian church or something like that. And there was a woman preacher that gave a talk. And she just said this one line, and it was a whole like talk that she gave for like a half hour, but there was this one line, and this one line just blew my mind. This one line got God to be so much bigger for me, because I thought, you know, God's within me. So, you know, if God is within me, God's relatively small. I'm sorry to have to tell you that. So, and you know, I understand that he's within me, but you know what I mean? Let me just go with my thoughts. So this woman said, not only is God within us, but we are also within God. And all of a sudden, I was just like, wow, that really works for me. That God's not this little puny thing. And, like, you know, God is everything. So, you know, this little puny thing is a lot. But, like, not only was I now seeing it as God's within me, but that I'm within God. That on some level, God is all there is. And that really expanded my sort of relationship, or rather my concept and sort of experience of God, because now it wasn't some little small thing that I take out every once in a while. It's just everything, and it's everywhere. And that's just an example of, you know, I think it's good that we talk about spirituality. I think it's good that we talk about God sometimes, because somebody might say something and it's like, wow, I never thought of that. That really like works for me. I think I'll take a piece of that because that really works for me and that's really helpful. You know, there's some people that say you shouldn't be talking about stuff like this because you might influence about what somebody else thinks. Listen, we don't influence anybody. You know, sometimes you let it in and sometimes you don't. But, you know, as far as I'm concerned, it's good to talk about stuff like this, because sometimes somebody might hear something that it's sort of helpful and it sort of works for you, or it doesn't. It doesn't, you know, but it is out there. You know what I mean? There's a further place than where you thought or where you've come to. And what I'm talking about is the concept of and this is kind of heavy, and that is that spiritual freedom is not for you, it's from you. Oh my God, good luck with that one. Spiritual freedom is not for you. As a matter of fact, the only thing that blocks you from spiritual freedom is you. Spiritual freedom is not for you, it's from you. And that's why, you know, we have to get out of the way. You know, I said that quote by Richard Rohr that, you know, before we can say thy kingdom come, we have to say my kingdom go. In order for God to have more of a space in my life means that I have to have less of me in my life. Do you understand? Because it's like a vacuum, you know what I mean? Like, there's... I understand, you know, infinity and all that, but I'm just saying that, you know, the only thing that blocks me off from God is me. I need to have less of me and more of God. That's kind of the essence of spirituality. One of the ways that I like talking about spirituality is that spirituality is sort of like a lake. Spirituality is sort of like a lake. And what I mean by that is that if you ever see a lake that's completely clear, that guarantees that two conditions are present. If you ever see a clear lake, it guarantees two conditions are present. It guarantees that there's some water coming into the lake and there's a little bit of water leaving the lake. That's the only way that a lake can be clear. Because if there's not a little bit of water coming into the lake, then the lake starts to accumulate muck. Whenever you see a really dirty lake, it means either there's no water coming in or there's no water going out. But if it's clear, that guarantees that there's some water coming in and that there's some water going out. And spirituality is very much like that. And what I mean by that is that the way that we bring in spirituality into the lake, or whatever you want to call it, is by, you know, reading spiritual books, meditating and praying, doing things for others, expecting nothing in return, trying to be honest, etc., etc. So that's the way that we bring sort of spirituality in. And then the way the spirituality goes out is that we need to be of service to others. We need to carry the message to others. So spirituality is like a lake. We need to be bringing spirituality in and sort of nurturing it, or whatever you want to call it, and then being of service. Then carrying the message and living the life. That's how the water goes out of the lake. I just recently came upon this quote. I think I had found this previously, but I just happened upon it recently, and I really love this quote. It's from Mahatma Gandhi. He said, "If you don't find God in the next person you meet, it is a waste of time to look for him further." You see, everywhere we go, we find God in drag. Everywhere you go is a manifestation and a child of God. Everywhere you go. You know all the people that you hate? They're all manifestations of God. Right. Trying to help you see something about you. Trying to help you see something about you. The people we hate usually are the people that are doing things that we don't like about ourselves. So if there's some group of people, or if there's some activity or something that happens and it kind of pisses you off, stop for a second and say, wait a minute, is this reminding me something about me? Because we shouldn't hate those people. We should thank those people, because if they weren't idiots, or whatever you want to call it, then we wouldn't have seen something about ourselves that needs to be worked on. Right? Our problems don't come at us. They come from us. That's a famous Chris S. line. And then this is probably the greatest description of the spiritual awakening I've ever heard. This is actually from my teacher. He said, to be really awakened spiritually is to have no more argument with yourself, no more argument with the world, no more argument with others, and no more argument with God. Good luck with that one, right? No more argument with others. That's the awakening. That's what the awakening looks like and feels like. Because the argument is in our head, right? The only place where there's an argument is in our head. We have this virtual reality that's happening that nobody else knows about and that nobody else is even a part of, unless we act out, you know what I mean? Unless we respond to that, you know, in some way, you know what I mean? We have a whole virtual reality going on in our mind. No one else is experiencing that virtual reality. And, you know, I'm sorry to have to say, they have a virtual reality in their own mind as well, and we're a part of it, you know what I mean? No more argument. How much of your day is spent arguing with what's going on? Otherwise known as misery. Life is a classroom, and the subject is love. And then Gurdjieff said, make love your aim, and then begin to look for direction. Trust in this, and the rest will take care of itself. But, and I'm sorry to have to say this, when it talks about practicing these principles in all our affairs, it needs to begin with us. The only way that I'm ever going to be honest with you is if I start to be honest with me. The only way that I'm ever going to even have a chance of loving you is if I start to love me. And boy, is that one the hardest. I always say that people generally say, I have to figure out a way to love myself. And I'm not talking about the selfish kind of thing. I'm not talking about, you know, I'm talking about having an appreciation for ourselves, having an acceptance of ourselves. The only way that we'll ever it says on page 164, we cannot give away something that we don't have. If we don't have it for ourselves, we cannot give it to someone else. It's not just talking about, you know, I work the steps and now I'm familiar with the steps and now I can, take somebody else through the steps. Here's another real difficult one. Unless I have forgiven myself, I cannot forgive another. And very often it's in the same behavioral, you know, sort of category or whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean? Don't mistake God's patience for his absence. His timing is perfect and his presence is constant. He's always with you. Don't mistake God's patience for his absence. And then this one is really cute. If you can sit quietly after difficult news, if in financial downturns you remain perfectly calm, if you see your neighbors travel to fantastic places without a twinge of jealousy, if you can happily eat whatever is put on your plate, if you can fall asleep after a day of running around without alcohol or drugs, if you can always find contentment just where you are probably a dog. That was from a Jack Kornfield workshop that I was listening to recently. All right, so now I want to read some spiritual experience, or rather spiritual awakening descriptions that are found in the Big Book. In Bill's story, he talks about, I was soon to be catapulted in what I like to call the fourth dimension of existence. I was to know happiness, peace, and usefulness in a way of life that is incredibly more wonderful as time passes. So that's somebody working with the steps and using the steps as a way of life. It becomes incredibly more wonderful as time passes. And then in Bill's story, he describes Ebby when Ebby first came to visit him. He says, the door opened and he stood there, fresh-skinned and glowing. There was something about his eyes. He was inexplicably different. That's what the awakening looks like and feels like. I have a whole bunch of these, but I got to move along. There is, however, a vast amount of fun about it all. I suppose some would be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath there is a deadly earnestness. Faith has to work 24 hours a day in and through us, or we perish. Most of us feel we need look no further for utopia. We have it with us right here and now. Each day, my friend's simple talk in my kitchen multiplies itself in a widening circle of peace on earth and goodwill to men. In step 3, it talks about when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we become less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. And then everybody's probably familiar with the 9th step promises, and then the 10th step promises. And then for me, this is what I would call the greatest promise in the big book. And it's on page 100, and it goes like this. Both you and the new man must walk day by day on the path of spiritual progress. If you persist, remarkable things will happen. When we look back, we realize that the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything which we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstances are. No matter what your present circumstances are, you can be aright within yourself. You could have just lost your job. You can still be aright within yourself. You could be in the middle of an argument with your boyfriend or girlfriend. You can find that place that is at peace. You could be facing a serious health issue. You can be aright with it. You can have peace. No matter what your present circumstances. Is that absolutely unbelievable? That's the best promise in the big book as far as I'm concerned. That's in working with others. And then I have absolutely no idea where I got this from, but I really like it. It's called The 12 Signs of a Spiritual Awakening. 1, an increased tendency to let things happen rather than make them happen. 2, frequent attacks of smiling. 3, feelings of being connected with others and nature. 4, frequent overwhelming episodes of appreciation. Gratitude. 5, a tendency to think and act spontaneously rather than from fears based on past experience. 6, an unmistakable ability to enjoy each moment. 7, a loss of the ability to worry. 8, a loss of interest in conflict. 9, a loss of interest in interpreting the actions of others. We are like the worst mind readers of all time, you know what I mean? We're mind readers and it just causes us problems, you know what I mean? A loss of interest in judging and criticizing others. A loss of interest in judging and criticizing yourself. That's probably the harder one, right? Yeah. And then 12, gaining the ability to love without expecting anything in return. Mm-hmm. And then I just want to share one that's from the 12 and 12. This is actually from the table of contents about step 12. It says, joy of living. Giving that expects no reward. Love that has no price tag. What is spiritual awakening? A new state of consciousness and being is received as a free gift. The magnificent reality. Monotony, pain, and calamity turn to good use by practicing the steps. Growing spiritually is the answer to our problems. Placing spiritual growth first. Dependence upon God necessary to recovery of alcoholics. Outlook upon material matters changes. So do feelings about personal importance. Instincts restored to true purpose. Understanding is the key to right attitudes. Right action is the key to good living. And then in the foreword to the 12 and 12, it describes the 12 steps in this really, really great way. It says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life, it needs to be practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. Who doesn't want that? Mm. Happily and usefully whole? I have felt defective my whole life. I don't feel that way anymore. Life is so perfect. Life is perfect. I remember sharing that at a workshop in Burnsville one time on Tuesday night. And when we opened it up for questions or comments or whatever, this guy challenged me on it and said, you know, how is life perfect? You know, babies are dying right now. Like, how could you say a life is perfect? And I said, life is perfect because, you see, when things are going well, it's sort of nice. It's sort of like vacation. You know what I mean? It's sort of okay. When things are nice, it's sort of okay. But when things start to change, I'm not going to say they're bad, but when things start to change, all it means is it's time to grow spiritually. So life is perfect because there's opportunities for growth, and then there's appreciation of life, sort of the vacation. So life is perfect. It's just that we argue with it. You know what I mean? Like, life is perfect, and God always has our best interest in mind, and we want to argue with it. It's perfect. Get out of the way. Get yourself out of the way, and it's just there. It's perfect. It's good. It's not all about whether I get the job or not that's important. It's not all about whether I get the girlfriend or not that's important. It's not all about whether things go my way or not. It's perfect. When things don't go my way, which is just a mental parameter, it simply means it's time to grow. How can I use this to grow spiritually? How can I do this to get a different perspective so I don't want to argue with it? Because God always has my best interest in mind. It's not as bad as I tell myself. And then I want to end with this because this is cool as far as I'm concerned. And that is that I was watching a video one time of this spiritual teacher. His name is Muji. It's an Indian guy. He lives in England, actually. He's from Jamaica. He's this really, really mellow dude. I remember I watched a video. It was 2 hours long. And he finishes his talk and he finishes answering questions. And he gets up and he, you know, there's this camera that was on him. And it's like over here, the back part of the audience. And he gets up, you know, he just finished and he said, you know, why don't you guys sit in silence? And he gets up and he just walks around. And unknowingly, he goes around and without realizing it, he stops and he's standing right in front of the camera. And he starts scratching his butt. It was the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, you know, you don't expect to see that. You know what I mean? Like, this was like some holy man. You know what I mean? Like, it was the funniest thing. He just didn't realize the camera was there. And nor do I think he would have cared if he knew that it was there. But during this workshop, this talk that he gave, basically what he does is he'll give a talk for, like, let's say an hour. And then he'll spend an hour answering questions. And he'll do this, you know, like two or three times a day for like a week. And then this is a week-long retreat with people like this, which is pretty common. And it was toward the end of the retreat. I think there was only like 1 or 2 days left. And he had spent the whole week talking to people. And, you know, one of the most common spiritual questions is, you know, I have a problem and what can you do to help me deal with that problem? Or, you know, I had this spiritual experience once, but I'm not experiencing it right now, and how do I get back to it? You know what I mean? This is like the single most asked question of any spiritual group is that students get up and say, you know, I had this spiritual experience, I'm not having it currently, and how can I get back to it? That's the single most asked question. And basically what they're asking is, I felt like God was here, and I don't feel like God is here now, and how do I get back to it? But you see, God is always and already here. So at times when we don't feel like God is here, He is. And that's hard for us as humans. Because we think that we have this like dry period, and that's not possible. God is always and already here. You cannot be separated from God. very often, as far as I'm concerned, how I translate when it seems kind of dry is that everything's perfect and nothing needs to be happening right now. And that's the only reason why God's not, you know, in my face that day. And, you know, he had just spent a week answering all these questions, and this guy asked another question about, you know, I have this issue and how can you help me deal with that issue? And it was really funny because he did something that is kind of rare. And he sort of made this face, and he kind of just looked down and he kind of shook his head. And usually teachers aren't so open with that, because he wasn't judging the guy or anything, but, you know, he was just like, you know, I'm not, it's obvious that all the things that I've been saying all week hasn't gotten into this guy yet. You know what I mean? This guy's not getting it. You know what I mean? Quote unquote, whatever that means. So he goes, listen, sir, I'm not going to answer your question, but I'm going to put it into perspective for you, okay? And when these kind of teachers say something like that, you know, everybody just sits up, because it's like, you know, this guy is about to, like, you know, just give it to you unfiltered. You know what I mean? Like, this is the juice. You know, you better be listening to the next couple sentences. You know what I mean? This is the juice, totally. So he goes, let me put things into perspective for you. He goes, what was your problem 3 problems ago? And the guy goes, I don't know. And he goes, all right, we'll make it a little bit easier for you. What was your problem 2 problems ago? And the guy goes, I have absolutely no idea. He goes, all right, let me make things really, really easy for you. What was your problem 1 problem ago? And the guy goes, I have absolutely no idea. And he goes, I would like to suggest that your current problem will have the same demise. And I was just like, holy shit, that was absolutely mind-blowing. You know what I mean? Like, that's called putting it into perspective. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, your mind is telling you that right now it's important. About a week from now, it's not going to be at all important. You're not even going to remember it. It doesn't matter. Your mind created a problem. Stop turning to your mind to solve the problem. It's easy. It's a little bit easier to say than it is to do, but it totally puts things into perspective as far as I'm concerned. One of the greatest spiritual teachings, and he did it in one sentence, you know what I mean? Like, just absolutely mind-blowing. So don't believe everything you think, right? Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.